Blog Talk Radio.
Denise Griffiths is your partner in success. Tune in each Friday as virtual assistants, industry expert, web developer, and online entrepreneur Denise Griffiths interviews industry experts from one end of the internet to the other. These expert entrepreneurs freely share their business building knowledge and provide practical guidance that will show you how to build and grow your own very successful business, be it online or traditional brick and mortar. Now, ladies and gentlemen, your partner in success, Denise Griffiths.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to your Partner in Success Radio. This week, I welcome Deval Bonnet of Access Smart. I'm sorry, I'm hearing a lot of crackling on the line, and I'm hoping it's not going to ruin our interview, but it is a little bit distracting. So if I get a little bit off course, it's because of this noise in my ear. Hopefully, it'll go away. So today, we are all noticing, we're all very aware that cyber attacks are now at epidemic level. A single computer breach is now estimated to cost over $7.2 million per incident. Companies, universities, utility plants, and government offices are battling this by adding more back-end security, like firewalls, antivirus, and CAPTCHA codes to protect their sensitive data, all the while leaving the front door wide open. The biggest and most overlooked threat to almost every system is not from the outside. It's your own employees, and sometimes it's even you. Beefing up password size and complexity frequently leads to more insecurity because it will cause the users in your office or your firm to practice really poor password management, and we're going to talk about that later in the call. Deval Bonnet has been creating security solutions for computer users for over 20 years. In order to provide these solutions to consumers as directly and quickly as possible, he founded Access Smart, and that's Access, ACCESS-Smart.com. With each of his innovations, the end user, you, me, the person sitting in front of the computer, is his number one customer. And this passion, as he puts it, is to empower people to manage digital information in the digital age. And it also led him to write the popular Online Identity Theft Protection for Dummies book. So within the pervasive nature of our e-commerce and e-business community, personal information from credit card numbers to your pet's name is more easily accessed. And identity theft and fraud has become an issue that touches every consumer just about every day. So good morning, Deval, and welcome to the show.
Thank you, Denise. It's a pleasure being here.
Can you hear the crackling that I'm hearing? It is really driving me crazy.
No, I do not, and but hopefully that I'm speaking loud enough that you can hear me.
I can hear you. So I'm so glad to have you on the show today because this is such a huge topic. I mean, you cannot open up your email, you cannot turn on the TV, you cannot, you know, look at any kind of online blog or political blog or informational blog that is not talking about cyber attacks these days. So you've got a lot to share, and what I would like to know from you is how username and password authentication is still the easiest and most cost-effective way to protect our data.
Well, we all use usernames and passwords. I mean, that's how we log on to and we authenticate ourselves. And it's really now finding a way to manage how we do this. If you'll read these different articles where they constantly say, oh, you need to have a complex password. You need to change your passwords every 90 days. You need to have uppercase, lowercase. And it just goes on and on, where those are all great security mechanisms to follow. But if you don't, you know, if you have to manage all of that and come up with all these unique passwords, you're not going to do it. And so we all know that people will circumvent their own security for convenience. And that's where you run into the post-it note security, where you have post-it notes written all over your computer screen or under your keyboard. We know that people are coming in and taking pictures of these and selling them on the internet. to the hackers to break in. People are using the same password everywhere. The number one password in the country, surprisingly enough, is password. And then they get really clever, and the number two is password with the number one afterwards. So, and then with the recent breach by Sony that occurred with the PlayStation and another company, and this firm in Australia did a comparison of these two attacks, two separate entities, and they found that there were a number of accounts that both sites had, you know, the same people, same email address, to where 96% of the time people use the same passwords on both sites. So it's really now, how can we come up with a way of not so much of implementing stronger security and imposing more problems onto people, but how can we manage that passwords and security? And that's what we've come up with.
So what do you suggest? I mean, how do you – and I do want to get into the yellow sticky syndrome at some point, because you briefly touched on it. What is the best solution today to protect passwords? I mean, what do you recommend?
Well, there's a number of what we call two-factor authentication type devices out there, things from the USB sticks that will store your passwords in there. And you really want something that has two factors, meaning that there are two parts to it, something you have, which is the USB stick, a smart card, you know, some type of a token, something like that, and then something you know. So you have to have these two pieces together. It's almost like in the old movies where you saw them launching the nuclear missiles from the submarines, and they had two people with the keys, and they turn them simultaneously together. You know, it's that kind of a thing where you have two areas that have to be together in order to make this work. So, you know, you have a smart card like we do, where all the passwords are stored on there. You have complex passwords, you know, 20-character-long passwords. These are really, really secure. But what we've done that makes it so unique is that you don't have to remember them, you don't have to type them, and there's nothing stored on the computer for a hacker or a person to get to. All from the user's perspective, all they have to do is simply double-click where they want to go, and it launches everything and fills in all of the password forms for you.
Okay. Do these passwords need to be changed regularly in your system or no?
That is good security policy, to change passwords regularly. Do we require it? No. It really becomes to the consumer and what they want to do, or the user. But it's good security policy and principles to be able to change your passwords like every 90 days. But that's fine, because you still are not having to remember passwords. You're still not having to type them in. So you can generate a new password within seconds and propagate it to the new site. And every site has its own unique password, so therefore, you know, if someone does get one password, they're not going to go and have a domino effect of getting everything else.
Okay. Devout, one of the things that I've heard you say is that having the user's name, will use me as an example. Let's just assume that I'm logging into a social media site of some description, and my username is my name, Denise Griffiths, all lowercase, which I don't do, by the way, so don't try to hack in. But, and I'm not talking to you, I'm talking to our audience. I never do this. But let's assume that I use my name, Denise Griffiths, all lowercase, all one word, and that is part of my password. That's a pretty poor idea, is it not?
Very poor. And there's a number of sites out there now where you can do background checks of people. And I use one of them just to, you know, for fun. But for $49, you can get a full record of a person, you know, their children's names, their addresses, their ages, you know, what banks are in your area, where you've owned homes. And because of a way a lot of the government documents work, you soon are able to dig out Social Security numbers, driver's license numbers, all these kinds of information. So a lot of people will use passwords that are related to their names or their children, because it's something you can remember. It's easy, because humans become the weakest link when it comes to security. So when you have a site that requires both a username and password, If your username is your name or your email address, that's already public information. But you make it very easy for an identity theft or thief to be able to go and type that in when they just say, you know, put in your email address. You make it more, because you've got two components, make both of them more secure by making them more abstract. For some of my more sensitive bank accounts, I'll have 20 long character gobbledygook passwords that are in usernames that have absolutely nothing tied to me whatsoever. I mean, it doesn't even spell anything. It just is a bunch of characters, random. And then I have the same thing for my password. So it really forces the identity thief to go and try to break two parts as opposed to just breaking one part.
Now, do you make these names up yourself, you know, these passwords up yourself, or do you use password generators?
I use a password generator.
What is your view on password generators?
Well, password generators are quite good. So there's no problems with that. Where you get into some of the problems is with these one-time password tokens, some of the technologies like that where it has a rolling code. You probably have seen these one where every 3 minutes a new number appears on the little screen and you have to type that in. That's a rolling code generator or a one-time password token. To do that, there has to be an algorithm that is created to synchronize everything and to what's the new number going to be. And you have to have the server that you're communicating to with the same software, same synchronization as the little fob that you're carrying, because you're going to be typing in this number and the two have to be in touch. And it's where they get that random number. And there's a component that's referred to in the technology as the seed. This is some type of a number that has to be inputted in there that both sides know. And it's, a lot of times it's using a time. It might be using a temperature, you know, things like that that both sides will know at the same time. Once you break that seed, you know the algorithm, and then you can go ahead and break into the whole thing and now recreate that random code generator. And that's what's been happening with some of the attacks that have been going online right now that's been in the news, is that the hackers have broken that seed. They know what it is, and it's just rippling effect through all the install bases of these computers. If you have something where it's just a random generator, like a password, excuse me, the human is involved in that as opposed to a machine. And humans, because they are so random in what they can do, the time when they actually click on to create a new password, things like that, a machine can't go and pick that up. So therefore, you have a higher level security by clicking onto something to create a password than you do in having the machine do it for you.
Gotcha. Well, one thing I do know is that people, and I'm guilty, I admit it, I'm guilty of this myself, yellow post-it note syndrome. Let's talk about that, because that's another way for passwords to just get out there.
Mm-hmm. What?
Note syndrome.
Okay. Well, we always refer to that as password or post-it note security. And yes, we all have fallen into that trap. And it depends on where you are, too. There are different areas. You've got identity theft that's on the individual, and then you've got data theft and data breaches that are on the corporate side where the employees are. What we're seeing on the corporate side, if a legitimate username and password is entered, IT cannot detect that as a security breach, because a legitimate username and password was used. So when post-it notes are all over the screen, we have seen incidents where cleaning crews, where visitors, where other people who come in, and with these new cell phones with all the cameras in them, they'll go in and they'll take pictures of all of those post-it notes when the person isn't looking. and then sell those onto the internet to the thieves, and then the thieves use those to be able to break into an account. And so here is where all the data is being stored with all their different customers. You know, you have a nice PlayStation Sony website that has a million accounts on there, and one simple password could possibly break open the whole thing and expose people to a million people. So that's where, on the corporate side, the post-it note security can be, you know, serious. Now, some people get where they think they're going to be really clever, and they're going to hide the post-it note. And, you know, under the keyboard, oh, no one ever looked under there. Under a Kleenex box, oh, no one's going to look there. No, we know where all of those things are hidden in the typical places, because they have to be close to the computer for to make it, again, convenient for the user. Then when you get onto the home side, you have all your post-it notes. Well, you run into the same issue where if they have a cleaning crew, you have service people come into your home, they can do the same thing, but you also have family members. And we're seeing from the individual side attacks, majority of identity theft and the breaking into different accounts and stealing money are really coming from family members or friends. And with this economy going on right now, it gets worse and worse. So, yes, I mean, your mother-in-law, your father-in-law, your son-in-law, you know, you don't know who, but it's a lot of it can be family members who are doing this, too. You want to protect.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that you and I have talked about in the past is your concern and mine, to be honest with you, about cloud computing. It seems to be everywhere. And I will be honest with you, being natively suspicious of just about everything, I look at cloud computing as a very dangerous thing, and I would love to hear your comments on that.
I'm scared of it, too. And there's some viruses, some really nasty viruses out there now. One of them that is hitting the financial institutions, the banks, is a virus called Zeus. And this is one where... you know, briefly, without going into a lot of the details, once it gets infected into a computer, into a home computer or a user's computer, they can actually take over the screen of your computer so that you might be looking at your balance and everything looks fine, but you are being—it's a false image is being portrayed to you, because what's really going on in the background with another screen is that they're actually deleting everything out of your account, and you don't even see it happening because you've been projecting a false screen. So it's kind of like we're back in the early 1900s. You know, people would keep more money in their mattresses, and thieves would have to go in to break into the individual's homes to go and steal the money. And then when banks became more and more popular, well, the bank robbers really became more and more popular because, again, you had one place where you could go and get more money. And the same thing is now true with the Internet. If you go to the cloud, you've got more and more information there. And as Willie Sutton always said, you know, why does he rob banks? Well, that's because where the money is. Well, paraphrasing, why do you do identity theft and break into computers? Well, that's where the money is. And so companies and people who are putting all of this sensitive information into the cloud, you're relying on another company who you have no real security controls over. You don't know where their servers are really located, and some of these companies actually have their servers overseas, and the laws that are in place to protect those servers are going to be different than they are over here. And so you really are just leaving yourself open. Now, there are cloud services that I use. I mean, for example, let's say, without endorsing them, but let's say you use something like stamps.com. That's a nice cloud service where you can get online stamps, but you're not leaving and putting your personal company information on there. And then you also get into the whole side now with cloud that they want to talk about, the mobile devices. Well, every single portal that you open up, be it a computer, be it a smartphone, be it a tablet, a laptop, each one of those becomes a new point of attack. And so it becomes a Swiss cheese effect where you get more and more holes potentially going into your account to break into it. So I really do prefer having companies keeping their own data, especially with the new privacy laws that companies run into. And that is, if there is a compromise of data, they must report that to the FTC, to the, all their customers now. You know, they've got laws here in California, I think in 46 other states, that if there is a security breach, by law, they must inform every single one of their customers, vendors, and employees that their personal information might be at risk. And in some cases, these same companies then have to go and offer identity theft services, credit monitoring services, a number of different things, and the fees and the fines that add up, where you have both your indirect and direct costs. If you have a breach, a company will lose probably about 30% of their customers. Will no longer do business with them.
Unlikely to come back. When you lose those customers, they're not going to come back.
They're not going to come back. And how much did it cost you in time to get those customers? And now you've lost that investment.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where
the acquisition cost is high to gain clients and customers.
And that's where the $7.2 million comes from.
Wow. So that's the acquisition cost is rolled into that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's all your direct and indirect costs. So it's not just I have to send out a letter. It's all these other things. And then you have to repurpose your upper management to do damage control. You've got to put in new hardware. You've got to go maybe delay the launch of a new product that you want to do because you're busy trying to fix the problem of a security breach. It goes on and on and on. And then who knows what was actually stolen. You know, some companies are actually losing confidential product information, you know what I'm trying to say.
Proprietary
information.
Right.
Yeah. And so how much did that cost? You know, you have a drug company that has spent billions of dollars to invent a new drug, and some company, or then somebody steals the formula, and for less money, they're able to go and come up with a clone product.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And steal all your IP.
I didn't think of that aspect of it. I don't know why I didn't think of it, but as you're speaking, I'm realizing that this is much more widespread than I had any idea. I mean, it's just, if you have a company, if you have a product, if you have a service, it's all open if somebody gets it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wow.
And when someone loses their identity, a lot of people think, oh, they're just going to go after my credit cards. No. There are ways to protect that you know, you don't need some of these services. But really, it becomes much more serious. When they get your Social Security number, they can take out loans in your name. We have people who will use someone else's Social Security number for employment because they don't have their own Social Security number, so they use a fake one. Right. You, who actually has that Social Security number, will get a letter from the IRS saying, you have all of this extra revenue that you have not reported on your income taxes, so we're now going to do an audit and we're going to fine you. Wait a minute, I don't work in Georgia. How can I be having a job in Georgia when I live in California? Then you have criminals who will go and use somebody else's driver's license or Social Security number for identification when they're arrested, and then they don't show up for their court hearings, and so now there's a warrant out for them. And there have been people who have been driving along, and let's say they do a rolling stop, and the police are there, they pull them over, they look at their driver's license, and the next thing they know, there's a gun in their head, and the policeman's saying, get out of the car, you know, put your hands up. And they're thrown in jail, and they're sitting in jail for 2 days. Now, do you think the officer has ever heard in their lifetime, but officer, it's not me. I didn't do it. I'm innocent.
Yeah, I think they've heard that.
Yeah, so.
Here's what I don't get, Val. Why do we still use Social Security numbers? It is so darn dangerous.
Why is
it still on play? I don't get it. I don't understand.
It became a poor man's or a weak way of trying to identify people that companies used. If you look at the history of Social Security numbers, it was never to be used as an identifying device. It was to show employment for taxes, and that was just about it. But now companies have gone in and used it. Now, I remember I had one incident. This was a quite a few years back, and they, of course, have changed their policy, but it was with a stockbroker. And my password they required was my Social Security number, which I thought was bizarre. And so then when I call them up, they want me to type in my password, so I do. And they said, now then, to verify who you are, would you please tell us the last four digits of your Social Security number? I said, oh, you mean the last four digits of my password I just entered? Mm-hmm. And they just kind of like paused and said, I guess that's not very secure, is it?
No.
But Social Security numbers were never used for this, and what a lot of people don't know is that they do not have to give out the Social Security number when somebody asks. Just because someone asks doesn't mean you have to give it. When I was in the hospital, and they said, yeah, and when I was in the hospital, and I was checking out, and I've already paid everything. They had all the checking or the credit card information, but they wanted it for their records. And this woman would say, "Oh, but I need it." No, you don't. I'm not looking for employment here.
Right.
And people have to know that they can't say no. And to think about whenever they give out information or requested information, do they really need to know that? And
I have been in line. I mean, you're absolutely right. Before I found the dentist that I'm at now, who I really, really like, I went to one dentist in town, and they wanted everything down to the paint color on my walls. They wanted my Social Security. They wanted my driver's license. They wanted my next of kin. I was paying cash, so I refused to give them any of that. Well, we have to have it. I said, no, you don't. And I got in a little bit of a tussle right there in the waiting room. I refused to give it. Paying cash, even giving you a check, I am paying cash. Are you going to take care of my, I'm just here for a cleaning. Do you want my business or not? I can walk. And eventually, I hated them. I mean, they had other problems besides being insistent on getting my personal information. But I have been in grocery store lines, or Office Depot is bad about this. Being in Office Depot, you go to check out, what's your phone number? Why do you need it? The computer asks for it. Put in your own. And I will not give them so much as my telephone number. It's bizarre. And I'll listen to people, and they're just giving up whatever information they're asked for. They don't even think about it. I mean, I actually, and this was years ago, but, I was in the grocery store. I had this first time in this grocery store, and the little checker said, I was giving her my check. And she said, I need your Social Security number. I said, no, you do not. We had to call a manager to resolve that one. I mean, really, honestly, why do people answer these questions? You want my phone number? You're probably going to get a fake one. You want my Social Security number? You're not getting it. You want my driver's license number? You better have a darn good reason for asking for it.
Right.
I just don't give it. And that's just because, again, as I mentioned earlier, I'm just natively suspicious of everything. But we don't need to give this out, and I'm glad you're letting people know. It is not mandatory to hand over all of our personal information. It just is not.
And sometimes I lie. I mean, these lies, so I lie. And so they say, well, okay, we really need your Social Security number. Instead of getting to a long, heated argument, okay, it's 000000000. I have the unique one that's all zeros. Aren't I lucky? And they kind of look at me, but they type it in. Hey, the field asked for a number. Okay, I typed in a number.
Right. Had to do it. I complied with my boss's requirements.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm like you. I give, but it is mandatory as far as I identify mandatory. I just don't give up my personal information. And I really wish that other people would just take that advice to heart and say, you know what? You need to explain to me clearly and cogently why I need to give you my personal identifiers. I'm standing right here, I'm giving you cash, or I'm giving you a credit card. The answer is no. The answer is no. And as a nation, I think we need to stand up and say, no, not going to do it. But thanks for asking.
And that's an interesting point. A lot of times you'll also get to where you're doing a credit, you're charging something with a credit card, and the person will ask you, you'll look on the back of the signature and say, can I see your driver's license? They just want to look at to see the pictures are doing. By Visa law, by law or by requirements of the credit card bureaus, they're supposed to do that, and so many times they don't. When somebody does that, thank them because they are actually helping you in preventing identity theft. I mean, maybe, yeah, you might think it's a little inconvenient having to go and show your driver's license, but, you know, for someone to take that effort to ask and to possibly look, it's protecting everybody.
Right.
So when that clerk does it, thank them, don't complain, because then they'll do it again and again, and they might be able to protect you from something that you didn't know was going on.
That's exactly right. And I don't know about you, but, you know, all of my credit cards are, they're supposed to call me when I make a purchase over a certain amount. And I have been called in the store, Mrs. Griffiths, can you come to the phone? They want to talk to you. You bet.
Mm-hmm.
I will absolutely talk to them, because if I'm over whatever self-imposed limit I have put on that card, I want them to know that it's actually me on the other end of the line.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it's not really an inconvenience. I'm protecting myself.
Yes.
So,
and
I think we live in a hurry-up world. You know, we got there, we got to run across the parking lot, run back to the car, and go to McDonald's. And that's
mm-hmm. I was reading some articles about people who have had their identity stolen. And, you know, where you think that, okay, it's just going to take me a couple of months to solve this. No, it
mm-hmm.
takes them years. And in some cases, once it's out there and it has been done, these thieves will share information, share credit card information, all this other stuff among themselves, that you'll get hit by somebody else later on. So this becomes an ongoing threat. Now, some people have referred to this as the modern-day electronic rape, you know, in the how people feel, because they feel victimized, and I certainly don't want to diminish, you know, what that really is like. But it's that kind of victimization. You never know when it, you know, it's going to pop up again on you, because it could.
Oh, yeah, I've read the same stories. It's really frightening what can happen. And, you know, businesses suffer horribly from this. I mean, and let's face it, business is in a bad way right now in America.
Mm-hmm.
So for a business to have to stand down and pay millions and millions and millions of dollars to correct something that, you know, maybe could have been protected, it slows the economy down even further than it already is. And, you know, it has just far-reaching implications. It really does. I mean, it's not just that they had to pay out a ton of money. Now they may have to reduce their workforce. Maybe now their advertising budget is not what it was. You know, it's a ripple effect.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
very much so.
So many things that go on. It's really scary. So let's talk about one of your products. You know, we've talked about cloud computing, and it does scare me. We'll talk about that again.
Mm-hmm.
You have a product called Power Logon, and I think it's a very important product for both businesses and people like me who are solopreneurs. You know, I'm in charge of a ton of passwords, mine, my clients. You know, they're critical. They are very, very critical that I keep these things safe. You have a tool. You have a process that called Power Logon. I would love for you to share that information with us here today.
Okay. Well, Power Logon is a smart card-based password manager. And why we're using a smart card? A smart card is like a little computer chip embedded in what looks like the size of a credit card. And if you've seen some of the commercials for American Express when they had the little gold piece on the credit card, that was a smart card. Or if you see NCIS and they show a military ID, they show the little gold piece of metal in the badge, the ID badge, that's a smart card. It's a computer chip. It's a microcontroller, little computer in that. And we use that because it's very secure. It's the same type of chip that's used by banks to store electronic cash, and also that trying to hack into one is very, very difficult. I will not say it's impossible, because as a security person, anything that's created by human can be broken by human, given enough time, effort, money, everything else. So I'm not going to say it's impossible, but it's very difficult, and the time and money it would take to break one isn't financially valuable. And these identity thieves, you know, no matter what you might think of them and what they do, they are business people in their own right, and they want to go and put in the least amount of money and effort to get the maximum amount of profit. So where we look at security, you have the antiviruses and all these different kinds of things. You want to put up all these barriers, and the more barriers you put up, it really discourages that thief to want to go after you and go after somebody that's easier to target. And as we talked about with the Power Logon product, passwords really need to be secured. And people who write them down, we know that you shouldn't do that. Using the same password, bad case. Storing passwords in computers into your browser. You know, someone steals your computer, shoot, they've got all your passwords because they can just click into where you want to go and automatically logs in. So with the smart card, all your passwords are stored in this chip, and you're always in possession of them. So when you turn on your computer, you insert the card into either a reader, a standalone reader that we sell. I mean, they're standard out there. It's not something that we've invented. They're standard products. But you have, or some of the newer computers have built-in smart card readers in them, so there's no problems. But you insert it into the computer very easily. You type in one PIN. You have to remember one password. And the reason why we do or we have that is to authenticate the user to the card. And the smart card, if somebody steals the card, they only have 6 tries to get that one PIN right. And if they don't know the PIN, it's like the PIN to your ATM, then it will lock all the data on the card. So you're protected. They're not going to get anything. And all the data that's stored in the card is all encrypted. So, again, they can't probe it. They can't just go and steal it. Well, once you've logged in, then into the card, it will automatically put in a 20-character long password to log on to your Windows computer, as opposed to having password as your password to log in. Now it's a nice, secure one. Then when you go to your websites, let's say you have a bank account, a stock trading, and your eBays and all, you have your little list of all the accounts that's stored on the card, and you see eBay, you just simply double-click onto eBay. It automatically launches Internet Explorer, goes to the eBay account, fills in all of the username, password information, again, unique username, unique password that you're not having to remember or type, and you get logged in. Where this helps is that one of the attacks, or one of the more common attacks now is going on is, of course, with the spam phishing emails. And you probably are familiar with those. And we've seen them where click onto this link, and you think it's coming from your bank or it's coming from somebody you know, and you go, I've got a problem with my account. Let me go click onto it. Well, it's a phishing attack in that it's not a real, it's not the company really contacting you, and they want you to deliver. Well, with our card, again, it knows what are the URLs and where you're supposed to go with the data. So if you click onto one of these sites, the URLs aren't going to match, and our card will not release the information into that field so that you're not giving them your username and password. So that protects you from the phishing and the farming attacks. The key loggers, which is another type of malware, which will monitor everything that you're typing throughout the day, and periodically, behind the scenes, that you don't even know this is happening, it will log on and it will send all of that data to the person, whoever infected your computer. And so they go through there and they look for your username and passwords. Well, because you're not typing anything, keyloggers have nothing to pick up.
Right. Now, one thing, and you and I have talked about this in the past, and you referenced it just a moment ago when these emails, I make it the best practice for me. I just never, ever click on a link that may come in an email because I get a lot of emails from PayPal. I get a lot of emails from, my bank, from different places. And it may well be that it's really coming from them. I don't care. I will delete that email, and then I will go directly to their website and log in. I never log in email. And it's just, it's habit. I just don't do it. And I think if people would get out of that habit of going, oh, PayPal right now is asking me for my EIN number, because PayPal is doing that right now. They're sending out information. If you're a small business, they want your EIN. After 200 payments or after a certain amount, they're going to start reporting to the IRS. That's fine. It's legitimate. Don't click on that email in your email. Just don't do it, because I promise you, now that people, fishers and all these, I don't know what to call them, spammers, hackers, whatever, they know that those emails are out there, and they're going to be duplicating them, and they're going to be trying to tell you to go in, get your EIN number in, and all will be well.
Yep.
You're going to immediately compromise your PayPal account.
By all means, yes, you never click those.
No, I never do. Never, never, never. You just get out of the habit, and so many people do because, listen, these guys are getting good. I mean, you'll get some of them think, oh, my goodness, these are really good. I know LinkedIn had a spot of this about 6 months ago. LinkedIn was, I mean, all of these emails were coming reportedly from LinkedIn. They were good. They looked good. They were not
mm-hmm.
on LinkedIn.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why they wanted to log in there, I don't know. But you had to, if you hovered over the link, you could see instantly it was not LinkedIn. But the email itself looked really legitimate.
And that's the trick, is that you
aware.
Hover. Yeah, that's the trick.
Yeah.
You hover over the link to take a look at it. And there's sometimes you do click onto them because you do know who it's coming from and it looks legitimate. But, no, you're absolutely right. Or the other thing is you go to their website and you call the number that's on their website. You don't call the number
right.
that's in the email.
Right, right. Yeah, it's pretty scary what's going on. So back to Access Smart and Power Logon. Walk me through the procedures because I do have the product.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens if somebody like me or a small business wants this? What are the steps that they have to take to go ahead and enter their passwords into this card?
Okay. To install the software, it probably takes all of 5-10 minutes. Depends on how fast your
right.
CD-ROM drive is. So if you can put a CD-ROM into your computer and click a button, that will load the application. And if you can plug something into a USB port, for example, that's the hardware installation you have to do. And then we have all the manuals. So let's say it takes 5 minutes to go and put everything together. The way Power Logon works is that when you first log on to the computer, if you have a username password, the Power Logon will pick up, say, oh, this is a computer that wants to log on. So it will capture that information and store it onto the card. Doesn't store it in your computer, stores it on the card. Then if you go to a website, your bank account, and you type in your username you normally would, the Power Logon who runs in the background will all of a sudden pop up and say, do you want me to save this to the card? And you say, click the yes button. Well, you've just saved it to the card. That's the amount of programming you have to do. Now, the product itself has a lot of features and functionality and advanced capabilities that for some places and people who really want to learn that, they can do customization and they can do a lot of things with the program. But majority of the users don't want to get into that. But so that's why we made it very, very convenient. The whole idea behind Power Logon is that we know security. We know all the components of security and trying to make things. We don't need to go and start touting all of the types of encryptions and everything that we use. If somebody wants to know it, we're happy to tell them. The main thing is to make it so easy for the user to have it and to be able to securely get into their computers, their websites, their Windows-based applications. So like a Quicken, QuickBooks, people say you have to password protect those. We agree. So have a nice, long, complex password, but the password is now stored on the card. You see your QuickBook account, you click onto it from the card side, and it automatically will launch Quicken and bring it up, and then the field comes in to insert your password, fills it in, and away it goes, and you didn't have to type it or even remember it. So it's really trying to secure that front door. And I mean, there's a lot of other security components that people have in their computers and that Windows puts in place. And by all means, you need all of those. There's no such thing as a one single point security protection. But it's that front door that a lot of people have never secured well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we do, and that's why we make it so convenient. Now, for different businesses, we put Power Logon into the small solopreneurs like yourselves that might have two or three employees. We have universities now that are using it where they go and they require 4,000 new cards every year. We have police departments, hospitals using this. And we can then add in additional technologies into the product. Some of the larger companies have an ID badge where they can, an employee holds it up to a little reader on the door, RF, and it unlocks the door and the employee gets in. That's the physical security. We're able to take that technology and put that into the same card. So now you've got the same card as an employee ID badge that you print onto it, so it looks like that, gets them into the building, and then gets them onto their computer. We can add mag stripe onto the back of it. So it's not just becoming a single component that you have all these different cards you have to carry. We can actually start combining these different technologies and features and functionalities into one convenient card.
Right. I know you had told me one time about the card that you're using in a hotel, which I thought was fascinating because they are able to use this for their employees.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to share that story? Because that was a terrific use of technology, I thought.
There's a lot of different ways people are using cards, you know, the mag stripes and the RFs and the smart card chips, and we really wanted to make PowerLogon so it wasn't a proprietary system that you had to buy our cards or our chips, that you're the only, this is the only place that you can get this technology from, because that really puts a damper on security. So we've opened up PowerLogon so that it can work with a mag stripe card. And so we had a hotel where they had 2,000 employees that they've already issued the cards to, and they're all using the cards to get into different rooms and different areas like you do in a hotel with the magstripe cards that you see. And they could not afford pulling back all those cards and reissuing another 2,000 cards. And that wasn't a problem. So we're able to work with PowerLogon in what we refer to now as server mode. All of the passwords are tied into Active Directory and the IT company or IT service within the company has control of all of that. So you're not actually storing passwords in the mag stripe, but which is fine. Still, we're using the computer now as a giant smart card, basically. And so now the employee can go up to a computer, and they wanted to have different classes and log into different secure areas that the company deemed that they were appropriate to get into. They just take their card, and they swipe it through the magstripe reader that's connected to their keyboard, and they type in their PIN, and there are all their accounts that they can get into. And they just simply double-click where they want to go, and again, username, passwords are all automatically inserted for them. They don't have to know what they are. And then when they either swipe their card again to log off, or they can actually just get up from the computer and walk away, because we added some other technologies that will shut down the computer automatically should they get up and leave. So they don't leave an account open.
For a certain amount of time, right?
Now, well, it's activity as well as we have an ultrasonic sensor that if the person is away from a computer at a certain distance, then the computer assumes, okay, the person has left, and so now it shuts it down automatically.
Right, which is an excellent security system. I know one of the things that this particular group, and I won't say who they are, they wanted their employees to have access to certain learning classes. I think Rosetta Stone was one of them, which I think is a very powerful tool. It's also very expensive. I've done it. But So what you're saying is these people, and they're off time, or if they're on a break, or they need to be in some kind of in-house internet cafe, they can actually swipe their card, log into whatever services the hotel or perk that the hotel has provided them, such as Rosetta Stone, which is very cool. I mean, it's a very neat thing to do.
And then where this expanded out was that they have a business center also, and that their guests have always been using. So now they can actually, we can actually work it with them that the room key that the guest is given can actually now be used down at the business center to log on to a computer to get into those accounts that that guest has deemed that, you know, that can be stored on the on their Active Directory server.
So they don't have to stand around, wait for an employee to actually log them in or pay attention to them. They can just use their smart card, access the business center, use their smart card again and access whatever tools that they've got.
Not even but they use their smart card, or they could use their mag stripe card from their room. Their room key. And so they just swipe their card, and they can get into their airlines, they can get into their different hotels, they can get into their car rental services, all these different places. Mm-hmm. So now they have a nice kiosk or a business center that gives the guests the capability of having very strong security into these sites, but the convenience of, okay, swipe a card, type one PIN, and because it's a multi-factor authentication, if someone just steals the PIN, well, that's okay. They don't know what the card is. And if they steal the card, well, that's okay. They don't know what the PIN. They need two things to come together in order to make this secure.
Now, what happens when the guest leaves with the key, you know, the card key? I have done it. You know, you just, it's in your wallet or it's in your pocket, and off you go.
Well, room keys have tied to it an expiration time, you know, how long have you checked out? You know, what's your check-in period going to be? So after that time, the card is deactivated. So the server will just say, okay, this is not a legitimate card anymore. So that's all taken care of in the back end when the guest registers, that all this can be brought in together, and then when the card is simply swiped in and given to the guest the first time, all that's been done for them. They don't have to worry about that. And if they turn their key in, well, again, the mag stripe is only good for a short period of time, and so they're not going to get into their own accounts. And if they, you know, someone did steal the card, they don't know the PIN to the card to get into their accounts anyways. And a PIN doesn't have to be a formal...
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
The PIN doesn't have to be like a little four character that you have with your ATM. This can be up to 20 characters long, a word, name, characters, you know, the whole gambit of characters that you can play with the keyboard on. So you're not limited just to numbers.
Right. And one thing about these cards is that they're reusable, are they not?
Yes, and our licenses are recyclable, which is very unique in our industry. You know, you have turnover of employees, and the last thing you want to do is, if you have a lot of turnover, is to go have to buy another license for that person and throw away a license. Well, we have it so that if someone leaves the company, you just put that license back into the database system, and then you hire another employee, you just recycle it. And there's no annual fees, there's no subscription fees, there's nothing. You own that license. We looked at it that way. We're really more interested in starting to put in the barriers for these data breaches, the cyber attacks, the identity theft, than just looking at it, how can we make a buck out of every single transaction that goes on.
Yeah. Where can people find you on the Internet? I know I mentioned it at the top of the show, but can you give your website address and your telephone number?
The website is www.accessaccess-smart.com, and our office number is 949-218-8754, and we're located in Southern California, so just be aware of the time zone differences.
Now, is there anything that we may have missed? There's a lot to talk about here. Is there anything that I didn't quite get to that you would like to mention?
Well, as you said, with identity theft and all that goes on, there's a lot of different areas that we can go into. What I just would like to let listeners know is just to be security conscious. Start training, educating yourself. Start questioning when people ask for information. Think about, do I really want to give this information out on LinkedIn, on Facebook? Does somebody really need to know that? Parents will, of course, teach their children when they're young, you know, look both ways before they cross the street and all these other types of safety things. They now need to also start teaching them some safety on social networking, on computers, things like that. With what happened with Representative Weiner, I mean, the way he really hurt the security industry, he did a great disservice to us all because he blamed that somebody hacked into his system as an excuse.
Right.
And when it didn't really happen, it just kind of like, oh, well, that doesn't really occur. So, I mean, that was just a lie. And it does occur, and you have to be aware of it. We found out, and so through some of the research, that in the last five, since 2005, and now when you add in what happened with Sony, over 600 million Americans have had their identities compromised. There are only a little over, 350 million Americans? So there are more compromises than there are Americans. So therefore, you have to assume that your information has been compromised. Now, there's three levels. There's compromised, identity theft, and identity fraud. So just because it's been compromised doesn't mean you're going to be attacked and you're going to have a theft and someone's going to drain your accounts. But then you have the identity theft where somebody actually has stolen it to do different things. And then the fraud is when it actually does occur. So just be aware. Don't click on the emails. I don't want to say don't use computers because I have three computers. I have all these different accounts. I do all these different things. So, but I just am cautious in what I do and I think.
Exactly. And one last question. And, you know, you and I have talked about this just really briefly before. There are some companies out there who say they can, you know, at least help you protect your identity. Are there any that you recommend over any others, or what are your thoughts on those?
There's some I like more than others. I don't want to endorse some over another because I don't play in that field. So it's just
right.
But
I think it's a good
idea
to have something in place, don't you?
Yes, my thought is that even if it's not the best company, if it's a legitimate company, it's better than nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You can go to your own credit bureaus, you know, the three credit bureaus, and for $10 you can freeze your credits so that someone can't open up more credit in your name and they can't take out loans in your name without you being identified. And that's just, you know, $10 each, you know, until you turn it back on, so $30, as opposed to having to pay $30 a month for the same service.
Right.
So.
And another thing that you can and should do is get on the Do Not Call list, and there's also another list that stops junk mail and stops automatic credit inquiries.
Yes.
You know, you can do that as well. Mm-hmm. Those are annoying. I mean, who has the right to go into your credit and do an automatic inquiry without your permission, but they do it? And, you know, go to donotcall.gov. You know, make sure that your phone number is on the Do Not Call list. You don't want to be giving out information to these people. You know, there's another site, I can't think of it at this moment, but it takes you off the junk mail list. I mean, there are just things that you can and should do to at least slow people down.
Right. And then there's also you should be ordering a credit report every year. You're offered by government, you know, by law, you are allowed one free credit report every year. And
so many
people do not take advantage of that. You know, having online bank accounts, those are actually better than having paper accounts because online you can check your balances daily and see if there's an attack or a fraud going on. And people who have online accounts actually limit the amount of fraud that occurs than people who have paper accounts by almost, you know, over by 100%. You know, instead of $100, or instead of $200, they only get hit with $100.
Right, right. And another thing that I have done over the years is to go paperless. I just don't have my bank statements or my credit card statements come to me in paper form. I just don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they can go missing. There's just too much information on them. So, you know, anytime you can go paperless, it's probably, in my opinion, a good idea.
Well, and we have that book, Online Identity Theft Protection for Dummies, which you can get on our website. And it goes through a lot of the different areas, both from the individuals as well as from the company side, of things you can do. I mean, you've got, as you said, the dumpster diving and, you know, not having paper trails to, you know, internet stuff. So there's a lot that should be done.
And get a shredder, for crying out loud. Invest in a $30 shredder.
Mm-hmm.
What is with people? Listen, Devel, we're out of time. I thank you so much for being here with me today. I know our listeners are taking away some really valuable information about password security. And again, for those of you who are listening today or downloading in the future, you can find Devel at accesssmart.com. It's access, access-smart.com. And what is the other website? ID security, Devel?
ID Protection Expert. IDProtectionExpert.com.
Good enough. And your phone number?
949-218-8754.
Thank you. You can also catch up with Devel on Facebook. So you can find him there. It's Devel, D-O-V-E-L-L, Bonnet, B-O-N-N-E-T-T, and he's on Facebook, and you can find him through my page as well, Denise Griffiths. Thank you, everybody, for being here. The show will be available for download in about an hour. Have a great day, a wonderful weekend, and I will see you next week. Thank you, DeVal.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.